WIF Cincinnati.
Go, Jimmy, go. We've got another edition of the Chris go, and Rob Jimmy, go. Late Night Talk Show. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together, we're the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
2:05 on a Wednesday morning. We're back, and we've even got a guest.
Tonight, we're going to be talking about UFOs, fact or fiction, and our guest is Pat Packard of the Mutual UFO Network. But before we get to Pack, we have to go find him.
Oh, where is he?
Well, we're going to be doing the entire show tonight on location, okay. The Starship Enterprise.
Oh, that's right. So he's on the planet surface.
So we're going to have to beam up. Here we are on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise. Hello, Pat.
How you doing?
We're doing okay. Now, you're the regional director of the Mutual UFO Network, I hear?
That's right, yeah.
And what exactly is the Mutual UFO Network?
Well, what we are is a kind of a grassroots organization that studies the UFO phenomenon. Have a lot of scientists and other people that are involved in it. And just take a look at it as best we can, as scientifically as we can.
How did you get interested in UFOs?
Well, it's something that started when I was about 15 or so. I happened to see a UFO way back when, and you know, that kind of set the whole thing off. A few years ago, I got back involved in it, reading a lot of books and what have you, keeping up with the literature.
So, let's talk about abductions.
What do you want to talk
about?
That's
what you've
seen. How many people have been abducted this year?
How many have been abducted?
How many people claim officially to have been abducted?
Well, let's put it this way. The Roper poll estimates that there's about 3.67 million people that have been abducted.
How many?
3.67 million.
That's a city. That's an entire city right there.
Well, see, what you have to understand about the Roper poll is that it crosses over some other phenomena, so it's not quite accurate. It crosses over what's known as sleep paralysis. Hypnagogic and hypnopompic dreams and things like that. So it's, I'm sure the number's quite a bit less.
Are there any characteristics that run through all the credible reports of abduction?
Well, there's a complete list of things that run through the credible reports of abduction. From beginning to end, it'd probably take quite a time to go through all of them.
Well, just hit a few of the highlights.
Well, essentially, there's a missing time phenomena that takes place. Generally, people see a light of some type. They could be driving in their car. They could be sitting at home watching television. They could be out on a picnic. Many times it happens while they're asleep. They see some type of a light that's unexplained. They feel a presence in their room. They get the sensation of floating or whatever. They're taken on board some type of a craft, and they're given an examination, and the type of creatures that are there, and the examinations are very consistent from one account to the next. After the examination, sometimes there are some other procedures that are done. They're very consistent, and they're told by quite a number of people across the board, all around the country and around the world. So then they're put back where they started from. That's kind of it in a nutshell.
Okay, what about this new movie that's out?
It's all the rage, isn't it?
Fire in the Sky? Is that it? Ring of Fire?
That's the Travis Walton story.
Okay, yeah. And do you know anything about Travis Walton?
Well, I know Travis Walton's case. First of all, all of them have passed lie detector tests. But the first lie detector test they passed was not a very accurate one. The only question that the people that were with Travis were asked on the lie detector test was, did you see a UFO? They believed that they did, and they answered that question. And we found out now that all of them have passed. Originally, we were told that one of the fellows, his test was questionable. But my understanding is there's a police report now that shows that all those people passed. Travis Walton was gone for 5 days. When he returned, he took a test.
Well, let's take it from the top. Who was Travis Walton, where and when did all this happen?
Oh, this happened, 76 in Snowflake, Arizona. These fellows were loggers.
Is that the name of the town, or is that just like saying?
It's the area, I guess, you know. It's the area. I guess that's the closest town. I mean, they were out in a certain part of a forest logging, basically, is what it comes down to. where they get in their truck to leave for the evening's work, drive, turn around a corner, and they see a UFO right off to the side. Travis Walton gets out to investigate it. A beam of light hits him. The others panic and go down the hill. And unlike the movie, they all came back, and Travis Walton was gone. The next day, the sheriff mounts a search for him with dogs and horses, helicopters. They can't find him. He's gone for the 5 days. In the interim, they think that he's been murdered. They accuse these guys of murdering and doing away with his body. And then they insist they take lie detector tests. Like I was explaining, only one question had to do with the UFO. Recent tests were much more, they're more thorough. And the questioning was strictly about the UFOs, and they all passed those. Travis Walton passed two. By the way, he failed the initial test he took. Then he passed one. Now he's passed two here recently, and the other fellows have passed. There were seven altogether, and I think three of them have passed tests, and the other four have just come forward and one asking to take the test. But as of yet, they haven't taken it. I'll tell you someone that we ought to call if he's up this late at night is Jerry Black. He's a local investigator, and Jerry actually conducted the test, or was part of designing the test. A lie detector test is only as good as the questions you ask.
Wasn't Jerry Black actually talking to Travis Walton?
Yeah, he talks to Travis and Mike and all these guys on pretty much on a regular basis. And that's he got in touch with Tracy Torme, who was the producer of the movie. And what he did was he told Tracy that he didn't believe in the case. He thought it was a hoax. So Tracy gave him some information and said, here, you find out for yourself. And over a period of time, he came to believe that it was a true case. And once he'd re-administered the lie detector test with the latest equipment and what have you, and they all passed, he had to accept there was a great likelihood it was true. I think he'd even say there's always an area of doubt. You know, you're not there, you don't have a piece of the craft, and you don't have a little gray alien next to you. So
some people do have pieces of the craft, don't they?
Well, it's there's been a lot of rumors to that effect, and a lot of people have testified to that. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine named Lynn Stringfield has talked to quite a few people that have seen the craft or the aliens. As a matter of fact, the secretary at Wright-Patterson in 1959 was dying of cancer, and she signed an affidavit that stated that she, in fact, had cataloged all the debris, had seen the bodies of the aliens, and so forth and so on. But there are quite, we've got, I think Lynn has 42 people, some of them college professors, some of them military people and what have you, that have either seen the debris from the crashes or seen the craft. Some people say we have complete craft, or seen the bodies.
Patrick, are you thirsty? Would you like a cold beverage? Because I can go right over here to the other side of the bridge and get the food and drinks inside. Get your frosty cold one. Would you like one?
All right, I'll bite. Go ahead.
Hey, we got a caller. The phone number here is 749-1444. If you want to call in and talk to Pat Packard, director of MUFON. Take our first call from a fellow who calls himself Satan. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey,
what's on your mind tonight?
What's going on, man?
We're doing a radio show. What's on your mind?
Not much, really. What's about UFOs, man?
What have you seen? You've seen a UFO, huh?
You talking about that Fire in the Sky movie?
Yeah.
I believe that really happened.
You do?
Yeah, okay.
Good. Well, thanks for your opinion, man.
Huh?
Thanks for your opinion.
All right, man.
All right, later.
Later.
The phone number here is 749-1444. We're taking your calls. We're going to call Jerry Black here in a few minutes and talk about the lie detector test.
Someone on a kick-ass guy, see if he's alive.
Yeah, see if he's awake.
Really?
Hey, Pat, talk about the Roswell incident a little bit, because okay. Isn't that one of the incidents where supposedly the debris was brought to Wright Pat, isn't that where part of the wreckage is from?
1947, outside of Roswell, New Mexico. Basically, at this point in time, Well, let me go back to the beginning. The Air Force released a statement that a craft had crashed right outside of Roswell. The next day, they retracted the statement.
Outside of an Air Force base.
Outside of an Air Force base.
Saw a spaceship go down.
This was, at the time, it was the 509th Bomber Group, which was the atomic bomber wing, and basically most of the people that were there were had top security clearances and what have you. In any case, over the years, 400 people have come forward and either are first, second, or third-hand witnesses to the fact that there was debris of an unknown nature, that there were bodies, or, like I say, secondhand, their father may have told them the story, or they might have been a neighbor or whatever. It's pretty well documented. In fact, a new book will be coming out, I think, in the next 3 or 4 months at least. And there's supposed to be some great revelations in there. I think a couple of them will involve General Exxon, who gave some statements, used to run Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and basically made some positive statements about what had happened, more or less confirming the story. Also, General DuBose, who's...
So the Air Force said that they saw a flying saucer, and we have the debris, and then what'd they do?
They shipped
well,
it off
it
to
was
Dayton,
flown,
right?
Yeah, they shipped it off to Dayton, essentially, is what how the story goes. It was taken, it was flown to an airfield in Texas by a fellow by the name of Pappy Henderson, who was a World War II ace.
And, is that Baba Black Sheep guy?
Could be. Yeah, probably is. Same guy.
Wow, Robert Conrad.
Yeah. Not Robert Conrad, but the part he played. It sounds like it. I can't guarantee it because I never watched Baba Black
Sheep.
Did
the Air Force, did they retract the statement?
Yeah, they retracted the next day. And, some interesting things surround that. It's pretty detailed and quite a long story, but people in the town, the radio station was pulled off the air, essentially. Teletypes were sent in to tell them to shut down the story right away. They'd lose their licenses. There was a guy in town that was a mortician. He managed to come out to the base quite by accident after they'd asked him many questions about how you pack small bodies and how you would treat them after they'd laid out in the elements for a while. So bottom line, he went out. He knew a nurse out there. The following day, the nurse called him in. She was very upset, told him what had happened, and that she'd seen the bodies and that they were in the process of dissecting them, more or less, at that point in time. Other people saw the bodies packed in ice. They were put on a truck. People that were guarding the truck were told not to look, and of course, you tell someone not to look. They looked. And they've told the story that they saw the bodies there packed in ice. And, of course, we've got stories of the people that have come forward, a lot of them anonymously, to tell their part of the story. But these witnesses are all documented. They've all come out. Their names can be used. And there's, like I say, 400 of them.
Okay, let's go to the phones again. We've got Jerry on the line. Go ahead, Jerry. You're on with Chris and Rob and also Pat Packard.
Hi, Chris and Rob. Hi, Pat. I have a few questions for Pat. Hey, Pat, you there?
No, I'm here.
Are you an ufologist?
Loosely, yes.
What kind of degree do you have to be an ufologist?
You don't have to have a degree to be a ufologist.
What kind of degree do you have?
I have a degree in business.
Is MUFON basically a business organization?
No, MUFON isn't a business organization. What we do, someone in my position, collects information. And what we do is send it off. At our disposal are people that are doctors. For instance, we have a group of people that are abductees here locally. A doctor runs that program. All we do is talk to people, give them the choice if they want to go to a regular psychiatrist, psychologist, or if they want to come down and talk to someone about this phenomena that's closer to it, whatever they want to do, that's fine.
How do you feel about the way the media portrays ufologists?
Well, the media...
school in England. Now, we're excluding Chris and Rob.
Yeah, excluding
here, right?
Chris and Rob, right.
All right, let's get that out of the way right off the bat.
Well, I think if you trace the origins of that back to the 50s...
the caller something. Jerry,
yeah.
What have you seen in the media that involves a ufologist? Have you seen... I haven't seen many ufologists in the news lately.
All wear glasses. Like this is a must, and you We'll all have pocket protectors.
The glasses are about as thick as Coke bottles, right?
Yeah. They all portray you guys as being nerds and cockroaches and being very nosy and being very pushy.
Boy, this guy's tearing you apart there, Patrick.
Hey, Pat's a swinger. Take it from me. Pat's a swinger, all right?
Well, I've never been called a nerd before, so I may ought to thank you, you know? But the way the media's portrayed this whole thing from the beginning is pretty much dictated by what the government has told them to do. And there's a lot of documented evidence for that. If you go to 1953, there was a panel convened of scientists and what have you for the government called the Robertson Panel. And at that panel, they made recommendations basically to Project Blue Book, one of them which was is to ridicule anyone that came forward with any claims of UFOs. That's common knowledge. There's a lot of freedom of information to go along with that. They did have some legitimate concerns at that time. They thought that if the Russians could basically sweep in and use the UFO hysteria as a cover and bomb everyone or something akin to that, or they thought that all the phone lines would be tied up and calls coming in from UFO people and, you know, that a hysteria would be created and that would be worked to the Russians' benefit and so forth and so on. But not only that, Project Blue Book and the people, most of the people that were involved with it, will tell you they were told to come up with answers. They were, first of all, let me tell you, Project Blue Book had one secretary, one officer, and a part-time scientist. Some months.
Congressional panel?
No, Project Blue Book was the Air Force's investigation of UFOs that the public demanded because of the sightings and a lot of the credibility of the sightings coming from airplane pilots and what have you. What Dr. Hynek was told and others, Dr. Hynek went from a complete non-believer to someone that organized his own UFO organization called QFOS.
While those stories are interesting, it's something to you know,
dispose of these things as quickly as possible.
As far as five species, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're having five different planets visiting us. As far as we know,
well, as that last caller said, they might be from the future.
Yeah, and that of course would should give us a little happiness, because if they're coming back to visit us, that means we've survived.
And they might like us too.
You see that? That's always a possibility, but we have to keep in mind that we have racial differences within a species. So may they. It just may be a little more pronounced. It's it's an alien life form.
Yeah, well, hoaxes, I really personally haven't run into one, but according to statistics, 1.7% of all reports are hoaxes.
Oh, it's got to be more than that.
No, it's
you
not.
You mean a blatant
that.
Hoax and an out and out, a guy
hoaxes.
With a frisbee and a camera taking pictures, as opposed to someone who just misidentified
Well, when you take into consideration, most of the hoaxes are photographic hoaxes.
Well, then how many of them are ball lightning and swap cans? Apart from hoaxes, then how many misunderstandings and weather balloons?
Out of 1,000 photographs that were analyzed by computer, edge enhanced, and all those things they can do nowadays, 500 of them were proven to be hoaxes of one form or
the
another.
Spirit,
most of them were not even disputed.
The soul and the body.
There were about
and I'm going to be talking to you about how you can be healed according to the will of God.
Some were explained as
and I'm going to pray along with you that God Almighty will reach out and bring healing to you or healing to your loved one.
They've become a little more localized, so there isn't any specific spot. You just have to be reading the literature to find out where these things are happening. Right now, we still have some debate as to what's going on down in Gulf Breeze. There may be some genuine sightings going on down there, but for the most part, I think there are a lot of misidentifications and hoaxes going on down there. But there is really no specific way to predict where a UFO will be seen.
All right, thanks a lot. Tell us about the Belgium case. What's it now? Didn't the Belgian government actually admit that they think...
Right.
Didn't governments... No, just you say it. I'm trying
okay,
to say
great.
It. Okay, great.
They sent up some chase planes after...
Oh, what are you talking about? Why?
Well, they had a UFO on their radar scope, so they sent some chase planes out after it, and as they got close to it, it dropped... I don't know, about 1,000 feet in less than 5 seconds, which is darned fast. And the kind of thing that, yeah, you'd pull an awful lot of G's doing that. You'd be, I guess, peanut butter and jelly, you know, if you were human.
So it'd be kind of like the King's Island thing, you just crush you against the wall.
Pretty much. I think on a magnitude, maybe 100 of that, yeah.
So what's
the wonder of it? I feel it even... Travis and Mike Rogers, the head of the wood-cutting crew, who was one of the co-stars actually in the movie.
Where they said, well, this is what happened. We can. They showed the a tape of the radar scope from inside one of the chase planes. They just have absolutely no answer. It's not a malfunction of the radar set because it showed up on different scopes.
So what was their conclusion?
Well, they didn't really draw a conclusion. They can't come out and say it's an alien spacecraft. They just say it's an anomalous phenomenon that deserves some study.
Has the United States ever even gone that far?
Well, the United States, back in the late 60s, the Air Force actually contracted with the University of Colorado to perform what they called a scientific study of UFOs, which actually proved to be nothing of the sort. In 1969, they released their report, and predictably, they found that UFOs weren't worth bothering about. Unfortunately, the report was set up with the conclusion at the beginning so that the reporters wouldn't read the case studies. If they read the case studies, they find out that close to 30% of the cases in this study went unidentified. Now, if you know anything about statistics, it only takes 5%, you know, an occurrence of 5 out of 100 times for a phenomenon to be considered significant by scientists. When you've got 30% of a multiple of 6 of what is usually regarded as significant, and you say it's not worth studying, you've got something kind of bizarre going on.
Following is a rebuttal to a KRUD editorial denouncing the legalization of marijuana. Speaking for the legalization of marijuana is Ashley Roachclip, president of United Heads for Hemp. Mr. Roachclip.
Yeah. am I facing the right way, man?
Just look at the red light.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. I just want to say, man, that a lot of...
Just a second, Mr. Roachclip. Let's try it again, okay?
We'll just
take it from this top and just relax.
Yeah, I know. I know what I was going to say.
Okay, we'll just take it from Mr. Roachclip, okay? Ready?
Right,
when
sure,
I cue you.
Sure.
Mr. Roachclip.
Yeah?
No, you're supposed to...
Right.
Okay,
right,
let's
try
it again.
Okay, no, I
ready?
Know where I'm at.
All right, on three. Now, just face the camera with a red light on it.
Yeah.
There you go. You're in
camera three.
Great, you're in focus.
Okay.
Mr. Roachclip.
A lot of cats put down grass, man, because they say things about it like it makes you lose your memory, you know, man. Well, I just want to say that I forgot where I was, man.
Okay, cut. Freddie, stop. All right, let's just take it once more.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sure, come up here.
Well, Father bless the people, and especially those in my listening audience who live alone.
And oh, what a feeling it is.
Seven 749, that's 1-444.
We're talking about UFOs tonight, the unexplained, strange lights in the sky, and other unusual phenomena. We also are going to be talking to Michael Cremo, who wrote the book Forbidden Archaeology, a little later in tonight's program. Now, this guy thinks that there have been men and human beings and women and people and kids and children around a lot longer than there have even been dinosaurs. Longer than dinosaurs.
Yeah. Yep.
Is it this guy? Yeah, that. No, yeah, we got Unarius up next. We're going to talk to Dan Smith from the Unarius Foundation. You're really going to like this guy.
Okay.
And then also I mentioned before Seth Shostek, Dr. Shostek from Project SETI, talking a little bit about radio telescopes, radio waves from extraterrestrials bumping around the universe, bouncing off stars and coming back to us. And a lot more fun to be had. Hello, is this Dan Smith in Charlotte, North Carolina?
It sure is.
Dan, how you doing tonight?
Just fine. Is this Chris?
Yes, this is Chris. We got Rob in the house, too. Say hello.
Rob. Hi, how are you, Dan?
Fine. Thank you, Rob.
We also have Terry Hendricks and Charles Stewart. These guys are UFO investigators. They're not with MUFON, but they're with...
TASK.
T-A-S-K, which stands for...
Tri-State Advocates for Scientific Knowledge. Again, Tri-State Advocates for Scientific Knowledge.
And Dan Smith, you are with the Unarius Foundation.
Yeah, Unarius Academy of Science.
What is the Unarius Academy of Science? Let's start at the beginning. What is it, where did it come from, and what is it that you guys are promoting?
Unarius is a nonprofit organization founded in 1954 by two very advanced cosmic visionaries, two psychics, Ernest and Ruth Norman. Through their psychic abilities, we have actually communicated with a number of different planets.
Now, wait, let's slow down. This Ruth and who?
Ruth and Ernest Norman.
Now, who are these guys? Where'd they come from, and where did they get these psychic powers?
Well, both of these people are really extraterrestrials who reincarnated.
Whoa, you mean these guys are like E.T.?
Well, they were born on this planet, but they've lived on many other planets in other lifetimes.
Well, how'd they do that? Well, we're talking like reincarnation, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Okay. Our people have lived thousands of past lives, and this is part of the basic teaching we've been given by our space brothers.
Well, right now, you are Dan Smith in Charlotte, North Carolina.
That's right.
But before you were Dan Smith of Charlotte, who were you?
Well, I was the same soul, but we take on many different bodies, but we're the same personality. It doesn't matter what your name was. Your name may change from life to life, but you're
so you
the same
could be
entity.
Dan Smith from the planet Marduk, or you could even have been Dan Smith in the body of Napoleon.
No, I was not Napoleon, but you're the same personality. You take with you what you create from life to life, good and bad, and you're creating yourself with your thoughts and actions. So this is the basic teaching our space brothers have given us, and it was the purpose of Ernest and Ruth Norman to bring in advanced scientific information about the nature of consciousness, which is what they did. And we have published over 125 volumes of information that they were able to channel from the minds of other people living on different planets. And this is all in preparation for an actual physical contact that's going to take place with advanced human beings who live on different planets. And we're told the first starship will land in the year 2001.
Really? Right here on planet Earth?
On planet Earth. And this is why we're having so many sightings of UFOs being reported. Many of these spacecraft are coming here to help prepare us for the arrival, and they're trying to help gently wake us up and help us lose the fear that many people still have.
Where is this spacecraft coming from? Do we know what planet or what galaxy this guy's coming from?
We do. One of the books they've given us in 1986, they gave us a book called Preparation for the Landing, and they gave us the year 2001 at that time. And they
are you sure that they meant 2001 and weren't just like, had seen that movie 2001 and had that embedded in their subconscious and thought that 2001 sounded good?
No. This plan to come here is many thousands of years old, and people like Arthur C. Clarke, who wrote the book 2001, which the movie was made from, he was psychically tuning in to that year, which has already been established long ago. We're entering into a more positive age, a spiritual age, and it will begin in the year 2001. And our space brothers and sisters will be coming here, and their time, their arrival, when the greatest influx of positive energy will be channeled into the consciousness of mankind on this planet.
Now, if you guys, Dan Smith from the Unaris Academy of Science, if you guys are onto something here, and these guys from outer space land in 2001, what's their purpose for coming here? What do they want with us? What's their game plan?
Well, the purpose is to enlighten us, is to give us a true energy science, starting with the basic understanding of what energy is, how it functions, and how we are all energy beings, or what you can call spiritual beings, who occupy a lower energy body that's called the physical body. But we have to learn about our spiritual body also in scientific terms. The purpose being to learn how to recognize mistakes that were made in other lifetimes that are causing problems in your present life. And this science that we're teaching, called past life therapy, does exactly that. It teaches how the mind functions and how to release yourself from the fears and guilts and other pressures that you're going through in this lifetime.
Now, most of this teaching was channeled through Ernest L. Norman and Ruth E. Norman. Are they still alive today?
Both Ernest and Ruth Norman completed their mission and have moved on to the other side.
Do you know where they are today?
They're living on a spiritual planet called Aries, a very advanced spiritual planet, which is their true home.
Does it exist in the physical world?
No, it's not. It's a spiritual planet, what we call a non-atomic planet.
It's what, like the fifth dimension or something?
Actually, it's higher than the fifth dimension. It would be in what we'd call the 10th or 11th dimension. There are many dimensions, and we are in the third dimension, as we all know. We're soon to meet other third dimensional beings like ourselves who are more advanced and have this understanding of the spiritual concepts of life. And we'll also learn from them how to make contact with these higher levels of life that we call the spiritual world. We will learn more about this, and in fact, they have already given us a number of teachings that we have published that actually describe how life is carried on in the other world.
Life, I might have been a monkey or a goldfish or something, or a squid?
Oh, no. Now, once you evolve into the human species, you develop an individual soul. You don't then regress and come into a lower form. evolution is always forward going. The difference between animals and humans is that humans have self-awareness and they have an individual soul. Animals have a group consciousness. They haven't developed that individuality.
Now, Dan Smith, we're talking to Dan Smith from the Unarius Academy of Science on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. We have in the studio with us Terry Endress and Charles Stewart from TASC. TASC would be standing for Tri-State Advocates for Scientific Knowledge, and these guys are way into UFOs and investigating these sorts of phenomena. And Dan, they have a couple of questions they'd like to address. A little bit about your Unarius Academy of Science.
Okay.
Yeah, Dan, earlier you mentioned Arthur C. Clarke. Is he aware that he's doing such good work for you?
I don't believe Arthur C. Clarke is consciously aware that much of what he writes is being influenced by positive forces. He may be, but I don't think he is. But we've been told that all of these people who write and do creative things are receiving help from their spiritual guides.
So Arthur C. Clarke would be probably greatly surprised to find out that he's being inspired from another dimension.
He may be. You'd have to ask him that.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think he may be aware that he is being helped.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people who are creative realize that there are spiritual forces that work with them.
Okay.
Now, do our friends at NASA know all about this stuff? And are they aware that there's going to be a landing? Because I bet our friends at NASA and even our friends at the Pentagon would like to be there when it happens.
Well, I do know that March of this year, there were several former NASA scientists, Richard Hoagland and Ken Johnson and several others, who had a press conference in Washington, D.C., and they accused NASA of a 36-year cover-up of extraterrestrial evidence, and they presented photographic evidence that came back from the Apollo 11 mission to the moon that showed artificial structures on the moon.
Yes.
So they're saying that NASA has known that aliens built structures on the moon.
What, like a universal Burger King or something?
No, they're saying that they have evidence to support the fact that NASA has covered up the fact that astronauts have actually seen dwellings, artificial structures on the moon that were put there by somebody.
Like what? Like huts?
No, and this one photograph they showed, it was a crystal dome type of a building, and one of the astronauts was standing in front of it. They also report that they've seen other structures. In fact, there's a video out that's very good called Miracle of the Unknown. You can get it through Questar Videos. It actually shows a film and videotape that was made by the astronauts in their journeys into outer space. And all of the astronauts, according to this video, have had experiences with UFOs.
Dan Smith, this is Charles Stewart from TASC. I was just wondering if you had any insight into the face on Mars and who do you think built it, if anyone?
Yes, we do. The very first book that Unarius published in 1956, Ernest Norman actually made several what you call out-of-body trips to the planet Mars and discovered that there is an underground civilization. There are people living underground in an advanced civilization, and they once lived on the surface. This was about 70,000 years ago, and at that time a star went supernova. The scientists were very advanced. They had about 200 years warning. They knew that a large chunk of this burning sun was going to come near our solar system and do damage. They decided to go underground in order to avoid the great destruction they knew that was coming. And so they've been there ever since. We also know that in 1976, as you just mentioned, NASA did take photographic evidence of artificial structures on the planet Mars, the face on Mars and three or four pyramids. And this shows that there at one time was a civilization on surface.
I have a question. Now, these Martians, I guess we can call them Martians, can't we?
We can.
Okay. Now, you say they live underground. Of course, you know, it's pretty cold out on Mars. I mean, how do they keep it on?
Well, they have very advanced technology they created.
I keep the doors locked tonight, Duke.
All right. Hey, when are you coming back to the big one?
Hey, did you get my fax today?
Yes.
Okay, good.
I looked through it. Looked good.
This is point-to-point communication,
in,
boys.
Diameter. And they grow their food stuff. They have artificial sunlight.
Now, how do we know all that stuff's under there? Because Viking Explorer didn't go there. Haven't been getting a whole heck of a lot of calls tonight. Not a whole lot of respond to this big issue of
56. Ernest Norman made several out-of-body trips to the planet Mars and brought back that information with him. That's the first book he published.
Now, how do we know that this Ruth and Ernest Norman weren't just like unreal something?
Well, you would have to look at the evidence that they brought back, but I can tell you they did not do any kind of drugs. And the work that they did in their life was always to help their fellow man. It was not to make money, because they didn't have any interest in making money.
In 2001, are we looking at a situation where there's going to be just a chosen bunch who are going to be able to enjoy the arrival of these aliens?
No, indeed. This is a worldwide event. All of us will be informed before it takes
place.
What do you
mean,
all of you? In fact, the you are, I think.
Thank you. You just heard me, didn't you?
Yeah. Sounded pretty good.
Thanks.
Hey, that song there, is that the theme song for the Shake and Blake?
It could be. Why couldn't it?
Because I knew they got one. It's sort of like a rap version.
It's all right. It's by a judge, though. I don't know what a judge knows about rock and roll or even funk and roll.
Hey, man, how much you want to bet that Klingler becomes a great quarterback somewhere else?
Not a thing, because those suckers bet because you know it's going to be true.
Talking Heads from the first album called More Songs About Buildings and Food. I'm still getting used to the new board in here. This is a lot of fun. You're listening to the Chris and Rob late night talk show. It's 5 minutes until 1 o'clock in the morning, and I hope you are enjoying tonight's presentation. I think now it's time to get involved in a little zombie music, so sit back and relax. This is zombie music on the Chris and Rob late night talk show. Must be finding out what the big hit singles are.
That's the way it goes in radio.
Okay, our phone number here is 749-1444, and we're taking your calls. Our topic is outer space. We'll talk hamburgers, too.
How do the kids act when they come in for those outer space shows? Are they generally well-behaved? And let's name names here. Which schools are punks, and which schools are fine, upstanding young Cincinnatians?
Well, most of the kids do behave pretty well. There are a couple of schools which are...
Name them.
Notorious.
Band. Name them.
Name them?
I don't then.
Zombie music!
Middle schools.
Middle schools are the worst.
They know it all, and they don't care what you have to tell them.
6, 7, 8, 9 grades.
Right? Yeah.
So which ones are the worst?
Middle schools. 7th, 8th, and 9th graders.
Okay, which schools?
Which school's the worst?
Yes, from which communities?
Well, we
How
had
are the Hamilton the schools?
Hamilton schools aren't too bad.
How about the Norwood schools?
Not bad either. Lakota.
So there you have it, America. Lakota High.
Zombie music.
Or Lakota Middle School.
Yeah.
Bunch of rich punks. So what's the most fulfilling part of your job over there at the planetarium?
When I get the kids come for the shows and they have lots of questions. I mean, really sharp questions about the planets or about stars, about black holes, about things you've read in the paper like the comet hitting Jupiter. Lots of questions.
Don't you get tired of like the same questions over and over again?
I don't get the same questions.
You don't?
They come up with some really stuff out of left field. They really do.
Like what? Like what's the most interesting question a kid ever asked you?
The most interesting question I had from a kid was, well, if the sun is a ball of gas, how can we get all this light and heat from it?
Well, duh.
Well, yeah, he no doy.
You know, to use the language of the kids.
Yeah.
And what your answer was?
Well, it's kind of hard to explain to a kid the dynamics of thermonuclear fusion.
Hey, do you think we'll ever have cold fusion?
I hope so.
That'd be cool.
We're working on hot fusion. The big problem with that, of course, is when you get the temperature so hot, you have to keep it bottled up with a magnetic field.
Ah.
And we can get the hot enough, we can get the magnetic field, but we only keep it both going at the same time for just milliseconds. They keep on talking about maybe another 20 to 30, 40 years, we'll have it. And that means we're going to have unlimited power on the Earth.
Wow.
I mean, talking about, you could have a $200,000 house with everything going in the whole place, constantly, and you'd have like a 20 buck or a 5 buck electric bill.
That'd be cool. We could run a radio station then.
Oh, yeah.
How big is the telescope over at the planetarium? Do you have a nice one?
We have actually three telescopes. We have a 13-inch reflector telescope, which we use for viewing the stars and such.
Is it the industry standard, or is that a little bit better, a little bit below?
A little bit bigger. We also have an 8-inch reflector telescope, which we used today to look at the eclipse.
What's 8-inch refer to? What's 13-inch refer to?
You don't want to know.
The
diameter of the mirror. Thank you, Jim.
Jim doesn't understand this little fact about radio. You do that so people know. You don't just have to show off constantly.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen. Now we're calling 97X.
97X?
Hi, is this 97X?
It sure is.
Well, I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together, we're the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Hi.
How is the future of rock and roll coming along?
Oh, it's just coming real nicely.
Are you playing all the hits tonight?
Oh, definitely.
What's your most requested hit been tonight?
Well, you know what? I just got off the phone with somebody, and they've been calling all night for Dr. Zombie.
Really?
Yes. They have been calling all night for I Saw a Zombie in the Window.
Oh, you mean that new song by Dr. Zombie?
Yep.
Well, what's it sound like?
It is just, it's awesome. I mean, it blends together psychedelic and hip-hop and everything. It's just
it's kind of hypnotic then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I'm always surprised whenever I find out that Dr. Zombie's climbing the charts.
Oh, it is unreal. The phone's been...